Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It was everything I dreamed of. Everything I dreamed of. Everybody, Bang Chung tonight. Well, and tomorrow night as well. It goes on for a while, these Olympics.
It's like a couple weeks, right?
So everybody Peng Chung all week. Oh, good job, Rick Camp. Rick Camp and Jay Zawoski are back at the shop. Barry Rossler and I, Matt Spiegel, are here for you live at the auto show. Come say hello. Blow off work. Or maybe you're planning to come anyway, and we're right over here at the Toyota Sports Corner with just tremendous machines everywhere around us, like Secretariat is moving like a tremendous machine. Wasn't that the description as he finished the Belmont?
I believe you're correct about that.
Right? So every one of these cars looks like Secretariat to me.
And I believe yesterday you promised me that I could just drive one home today. Did you not?
This is our plan. Barry, you need to get a car because your cruiser has upwards of 127,000 miles.
117.
Oh, 117.
117,000 miles.
You might have another $8,000 left in you. You know? You might.
I got a friend who has 256,000 on his SUV.
Well, you know, maybe, I mean, these days they are built to go pretty darn far. As long as you pay the mechanic in question a little bit along the way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, you need a car, and we're going to have people come to you. Ordinarily, we don't necessarily like it when strangers walk by and start to talk to us as we're attempting to do live radio. But I think if people want to come by and pitch a car deal directly to Barry Rossler.
Well, I think I'm in a good position here. I think this is what you'd call a buyer's market.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I'm not very good at this, as I explained yesterday. I often, when I buy a car, which is every 10 or 12 years,
whether you need to or not,
walk into a dealer and just say, I need to be out of here in 15 minutes with a car. How do we do this? What's the best way to do this? So I'm not what you'd call a solid negotiator.
Right. Instead of like calling to people in the back room, like, and sending you back there, the guy's like, hey, everybody come out here.
Watch this.
Everybody come out here and watch me take ownership of this guy.
That's not the phrase they use.
Which, yeah.
But I see, but I get what you're
maybe publicly
trying to say. I think this is a good spot for me because there's a lot of vehicles here.
There really are.
And I don't see at this moment a lot of competition for me.
No, not right now. This first hour is a good
It's a good time for me because it's not technically open yet.
I believe, the gates aren't open at 10 o'clock.
So in terms of the number of cars versus the number of people trying to take one right now, it looks good for me.
So now you're describing it like we're broadcasting just to the car sellers who might be in here now during this hour. It's rather a niche audience.
Yeah.
But it's like in college. You ever work for the college radio station? It was just a transmit, not a broadcast. Like you could only hear it in the dorms and the dining hall. Those are the only spots you could actually hear it. You know, maybe this is akin to that kind of hour for you.
I was drunk in college.
Well, hopefully you're not today. We're going to have a lot of fun today talking about many things, although some of them are grim. And by grim, I mean the Blackhawks. What an abomination that thing has turned into. That's rock bottom last night, right? I mean, you lose
Sam Kinison stomping on the stage floor saying, when do we hit rock bottom?
I think you must have hit it there. That's your sixth straight loss. You give up six goals to a team that is now 7-20 at home. That's the Coyotes. They have 14 wins on the year. Both of your backup goalies get lit up. You have now, in your last, their last 15 games, Barry, they're averaging less than two goals a game offensively. You want to blame Crawford, they're scoring 1.79 goals a game over the last 15. Only team in the NHL under two. They can't do a damn thing. That was pathetic.
It's all a problem at this point, John Fox. You can say it has nothing to do with Crawford, but you can look at every single game since he's been gone. And there's been at least one bad goal, if not two. Last night was two bad goals. So you know, if you add it all up, you say, no, this is not in, this is not because of Crawford. I wouldn't argue that point. But within every game, there's a point where it's a one-goal game or a no, or there's no score in the game and you give up a bad goal and it changes the game. And these NHL games, it's a, you know, it's a very, very fine line. So that one-goal difference changes the flow of a game. And for a team completely lacking confidence right now, it's a factor. So I wouldn't dismiss it.
Well, I understand
out of
that.
Hand.
Also, because you could go to the macro, which I would absolutely grant, and that is, man, our goalie's still not here. He's still not playing, and you've gone this long with your top five goalie in the NHL who's not there. So yeah, it is of course a factor in the overall confidence
of
the team.
So if you wanted to,
but it's everything now.
Yeah, it's pretty much everything. But I mean, I wouldn't dismiss the Crawford thing out of hand. You could probably look back to games. You know, they had a good stretch before their bye week, and then they have the terrible game in Detroit. And really, since then, it just hasn't been very good.
You had the terrible game in Detroit, then a week off, and another terrible game immediately following.
And, you know, since then, what's been good? The game in Nashville? I don't even think you could claim that in Nashville they were the better team in that game. So I don't know that there's a whole lot to look at. I don't dismiss the Crawford thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of everything right now.
Before we get to that in a little more detail, let me tell you that during the show today, we will have three technique where we will go around a specific baseball division because baseball is here. It is freaking glorious, except for the one more miserable, blatant reminder of the dysfunction of the offseason that remains. Because this was a terrible offseason. It's just about fully behind us. There's one more ugly, awful reminder of the dysfunction. So I want to talk about that as well as some of the good stuff. Yeah, hopefully. Finally, necessarily. We have a Valentine's Day memory, Rosner style, really, as only Barry can encapsulate love and respect. And also the least respected man on MLB Network weighs in on Yu Darvish, and that was good for some entertainment. This segment on The Score is brought to you by CeCe's. At CeCe's, if you don't see what you want on the buffet, you can order your own personal pizza. There's thousands of ways to customize it your way, and it's included with your buffet for just five and change. Only at CeCe's, dine and only. Price may vary. Restrictions apply. And we will talk about how you cannot compete with the elite-level tanking like the Orlando Magic pulled off last night. They are the Spurs of tanking, Barry. They don't mind not playing guys. They had four of their top guys were DNPs, some injury, some tanking. Let's just not play those guys.
And still it took a horrific inbounds pass.
But that's why they're the Spurs. That was beautiful. I mean, if you're looking to lose that game and Mario Hezonja is carrying you to an improbable possible comeback, you need an inbounds pass that pathetic to pull off the tank run, which is what Orlando did last night.
I mean, if you didn't know better, and I'm not saying that I do know better, I'd say that was absolutely intentional. That was so bad.
Oh, my God.
I mean, really. I mean, for real, intentionally bad.
And it might be. And yet you can't prove it. That's what I'm saying. That's elite level stuff. You can't compete with them. I'm not happy with where the Bulls are in the number eight spot right here in the draft, looking at a Bridges, maybe a Miles Bridges, a Mikhail Bridges. That's what some of the mock drafts will tell you. Those are not the guys you want.
I kind of thought when that happened last night that in your compartments, as you compartmentalized, that you were probably not happy about that moment, even though you enjoyed the moment.
Last night?
Zach LaVine.
No? See, that's the problem. This is what I get, right? Because I enjoyed Friday. I enjoyed that win.
It was a lot of fun.
It was clean for me. I was like, hey, that's great. Nice, formative kind of win to put in the back pocket for LaVine and Markkanen. Hold on to that. That's great. Good vibes, everybody. But then this is what I get. I get last night, which is absolutely conflicted and ugly and in that messy place that it is. But it's intellectually where you need to be, which is they would have been much better off losing that game.
Yeah,
much better off.
I wondered how you were handling that. No sense of thrill even on the steal and dunk.
I mean, there's that visceral kind of reaction of, hey, that looks good with the jump and the dunk and the finish, but it went away fast. Went away very fast. But this is what the league is. This is what basketball is, and we know. But the much bigger story is the Blackhawks, as we are here live for you from the Auto Show.
Yeah, visit Toyota at the Chicago Auto Show to see the full lineup of cars, trucks, and SUVs. Maybe see me drive away in one. No other manufacturer has more models for you to choose from. Toyota, let's go places. There's a bigger picture here, and if you were trying to lend some perspective to this and maybe not get so caught up in how ugly it is at the moment, a year ago at this time, they were on their way to being the best team in the Western Conference and heading into the postseason as the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. And now you are here. So, you know, how do you get from there to here? How does that happen? Well, a series of bad performances by individuals, another year of age.
Don't you think last year was in some ways a bit of a mirage, though, because Crawford had been so brilliant? Don't you think it registers now as a bit of a mirage?
Well, that's easy to say in hindsight. When they were running roughshod over the West through March, that...
Yeah, that's 40-40. That's twice as good as the usual hindsight. That's what Big Cat Williams offers us on this show.
Think about their March last year and how good that was. I don't think anything about that was a mirage. They beat everybody's brains in March and then failed to show up in the postseason when Nashville looked so much faster. They were able to move their feet so much better. Their defense looked so young and quick, and the Hawks didn't look to even belong on the ice with that team. So you make a series of changes, including bringing back Brandon Saad, who had two really good years in Columbus, and you bring him back and you trade a tiny person who was invisible in the postseason. Invisible. Absolutely didn't show, you never saw him out there because the postseason is physical.
Yeah.
You can pretend all you want that there's that it's ballet now, but in the postseason it still gets physical. And if you're a tiny person and you don't want to go to the net, then you're going to have a hard time being a part of things. So you make a series of changes, but now you're a year older. You make some changes on defense to try to get some more younger guys in here, some new guys in here, guys who are capable of moving their feet. And the problem with that is you still have Keith and Seabrook. And Keith is trying. He is trying, but he's bad. Last night, another one. I mean, look at the goals last night. Let me just run through a couple of these goals last night.
Yeah, because the one that sticks into my mind is the third one, the third and final one against
Forsberg.
Forsberg, when it's from the side, and it's just pathetically soft.
So these are small things, and when you add them all up, it looks like a really bad game. But look at the little details in this game. Kane loses his point on the first goal. On the second goal, it's an Osterley turnover, and then Keith has the guy in front of the net and just loses his check, and it's an easy tap, and it's a 2-foot putt. Third goal is a bad goal. The fourth goal is a bad goal. And Joel made the point after the game that, he used the word almost getting there, or the phrase almost getting there several times. We almost got there on this one. Almost got there on this one. Almost got there on this one. Well, every time you almost get there, but you don't take the extra step, it winds up in the back of your net, or you miss a chance in front of their net. Brandon Saad, through the midway point of the season, could have had 20 more goals than he did at that point if he takes one more step. Just take one more step. And so why is this happening? I can't define it for you. I can't place blame on any one specific individual. But at least through that point where they lost that game against Detroit when they were so bad, it could have been a much better team with a much better record with a little bit more effort and a little bit more focus. And now, do you want to point a finger at somebody for that? I imagine most people would probably point the finger at Joel for that.
Because you're talking about so many different angles and so many different people not taking that extra step. So that, of course, you have to look higher and you wonder about the collective desperation, the collective motivation to work that amount that you have to work to win every one of those times.
But it was a coach who trusted his core, a coach who trusted his core, who gave them the last week of last season off, and then they weren't ready going into the postseason.
Right.
But his way of doing things got them three Stanley Cups.
I understand, but if that way of doing things and trusting them, if it's not working anymore.
Right, I'm merely trying to lend some perspective to a bigger picture in how you got to where you got to in the postseason last year. Mm-hmm. At which point you say, okay, I trusted my core. I gave you guys all this rope, and you guys performed for me over and over and over again. So going into last season's postseason, I did it one more time, and then you disappointed me. You let me down. I gave you that rope, and you failed to fire. You did not show up. Okay, so now you go into this season, and you say, all right, do we make radical changes in the way we treat you as an individual when you've done it so many times for me? Or was that something of an outlier? All right, so you go through half a season, and there's some ups, there's some downs, there's some good, there's some bad, and you start to say, all right, now is it a question of me giving you too much rope? Are you just not very good anymore? I mean, Jonathan Toews, who I'm a great admirer of, doesn't look like the same player. I already told you Brent Seabrook was bad. I already told you Duncan Keith was bad. Is there just not enough talent on this team? I think in the bigger picture, there's just not enough talent here.
We got to take a break. So let's pause there for a second.
And then I want to get specifically to the defense and some of the guys on this team.
All right. And there's one guy that seems like a lightning rod for me. Like I just keep looking back at him, at both his numbers and his contract, and wondering if there's anything to be done. But that concept of just simply not enough talent is a pretty horrific place to be.
But everybody has to pay the bill, Matt. Everybody pays the bill eventually. Okay.
Well, then maybe they should all just go away for a while. I mean, and it looks like they're gonna. But right now, I know that the reaction for a lot of fans and a lot of observers is just like, I don't want to see this anymore.
It's awful. Oh. I mean, it's awful to watch.
All right. Well, keep talking about it. Isn't that fun? On 670 The Score, it's Spiegs and Rosner here with you. Barry is in for Danny. Three technique at the top of the hour and some you Darvish things along the way. Keep it here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's Coach Q after a really, really ugly, ugly loss last night. The Blackhawks lose their sixth in a row. This sure feels like rock bottom. Line blenders all over the place. Brandon Saad is the guy I keep thinking about, Barry. He's making $6 million. He has 1 point in 15 games. That's an assist. He hasn't scored a goal in 5 weeks. And he's supposed to be that middle of his prime mix of exuberance and experience, you know, top line guy that you needed desperately to be next to Toews. He's supposed to be a guy who can help carry you for portions, and he's not doing that. So then you got to look at the kids. Kane seems to be the only veteran who's playing like himself and looks like himself for the most part. And what you've got here is like a lot of fans and a lot of folks, and I'm one of them, kind of hunting around and looking, all right, so what do you do? What the hell do you do? Because that's the bottom. This feels like a night where somebody gets fired. And you're painting a much bigger, broader, and frankly bleaker picture.
Well, everybody has to pay the bill, Matt. Everybody pays the bill. It always happens. Every dynasty ends in grim fashion. It's always that way. Almost always that way. You've had 10 years of quite a run. And, you know, you could argue that against St. Louis 2 years ago in Game 7, if they win that one, they have a really good chance to win the Cup, if they win that game. Last year, nobody saw what was coming in the postseason. You look at that and you say, okay, aberration, or is that what it is? After the march you had, after the season you had, I don't know that you could have really seen this coming. You make some changes to think that maybe you still have a chance this year, but some of those changes were also made to start the transition. Some of those changes made on defense were in order to start a transition.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened over the last couple of weeks is sort of difficult to explain, but everybody pays the bill. Every dynasty ends ugly. This is the end of it, and it's unpleasant. Now,
isn't it earlier than you thought we'd be at the end of it, though, Barry? If we're looking at that and we're saying, and I understand exactly what you're saying, because it sure doesn't, the simplest reasons, the Occam's razor reason, is that no, there is not enough talent. But this is awfully quick for Taves to have fallen off the table like this.
Well, if you look at the miles on all of these guys over the last 10 years and you throw in all the international tournaments and all the summers of having to start a month early to get ready for whatever it is they had to do, or the short summers because of playing very late into June, you add it all up. Am I surprised? Yes. Am I surprised to see Taves like this? Yes.
Yeah.
He's tried a few different things over the last couple of years. He's tried to put on weight. He's tried to take off weight. He's tried to get stronger. He's tried to get quicker. It's ugly right now. I don't know what to tell you. I don't have an answer for you. I am surprised, and I am confused by it. I really am. I don't have anything for you on Jonathan Taves.
Oh, this is not a good place to be. And by that, I don't mean the auto show, which is a good place to be. Let's get an update from Joe.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Ah, yes, it's Fat Tuesday tonight, the beginnings of Mardi Gras. So our music, as it often does, by the way, on this show, will have a little bit of a New Orleans flair. Rick Camp loves the horns, loves a good groove. You know I do, so let's play some along the way. I feel like as you and I are having this Blackhawks conversation, Rosner, like I'm trying, I got a whole bunch of little ideas, you know? I got small ideas. Hey, we could do this, we could do that, we could do this. What about this? What about that? What would this do? What would this do? And you just keep looking at me going, it's over. You just, like, you're giving me the bleakness. And it reminds me, you ever see Singles? I love Singles. The movie Singles. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
Campbell Scott is in the mayor's office. Tom Skerritt is the mayor of Seattle. And Campbell Scott has been working for months on a presentation of the super train. And he's going to try to sell the mayor on this idea of the super train, right? And he gives him the whole presentation. And the mayor goes, no. And he says, but if we give people good coffee, and if we do this, and then there's a close-up of the lips of the mayor, and he goes, my answer is no. It's just like, and I'm sitting here thinking, well, if you trade sod for something right now, I know it's low on market value, or if you go ahead and you fire Q and you bring in a Sutter, I don't know any Sutter, you bring somebody in since you got rid of his assistants last year. You do, I mean, like, all these different things you could do. Do they matter? Do they even matter if we're where the perspective that you're offering seems to intimate that we are?
You say Singles, and I think Xavier McDaniel.
Yeah, that's good, too.
I really don't know why. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of your ideas. Fundamentally, nothing wrong with any of them. I just don't know that there's really much point. At the end of a dynasty, you always try to keep it together. You always try to. Mm. You never see it coming. The things you do when you lock up the players you lock up and you spend so much of your cap on so few players, you don't expect those things to go bad quickly. What you're trying to do is maximize the life of the dynasty,
right,
by adding enough players around the core to make it work. It's very, very hard to do.
I know.
They were pretty successful at doing it.
A couple of times.
You know, three cups in that short amount of time is pretty amazing given the salary cap era in which you live. When your cap is eaten up by so few players, I mean, you are constantly moving 6, 8, 10 players off your roster and trying to find more pieces. It's really difficult to do. At this point, you have some problems because of some of these contracts that are unmovable. So while your ideas are admirable and well thought out, I don't know that there's a ton you can do unless you can get rid of some of these contracts.
Is Stan Bowman's job in trouble? I was talking to our guy Jay Zawoski before the show. Was talking about, because Stan talked last week, right? And Jay, hop on for a sec. You were telling me, like, the tone of Stan last week was kind of like, well, I'll just keep showing up.
He basically saying, I'm the GM until they tell me I'm not, so I'll just keep showing up and doing my job until I'm told not to anymore. Which to me sounded strange. Usually he sounds very much in charge and very much on top of what's happening. That was the first time I ever heard him sound, I guess the word would be weakened. I don't know. It was strange. It just sounded weird to me.
Because he was so angry last year. I keep thinking about how angry he was at the end of last year and everything that he did, Barry. And then, well, how does he feel today? You know?
Again, my perspective is from a much bigger picture. And if I were Stan Bowman, I would be thinking the difference between last year and this year is last year going into the postseason, I thought we had a great chance to win the Stanley Cup. right now, all I'm thinking is how can we start to rebuild this thing? That's all. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I would be angry. I think I would be resigned to the fate of this team and wondering how to get it going the other direction as quickly as possible. Now, that involves moving bad contracts, and that's hard to do. If you're going to do it, usually it means you're going to have to add some of your other players along with it, which costs you some of your assets. So it's painful. If you're going to go that way, it's really painful. But that might be the only way that you do it. I have talked to you in the past about getting young defensemen involved in this team and developing them. And until you do that, nothing else really matters. Everything you do on an ice rink is based on who on your defense can move the puck. Everything begins and ends with your defense, whether it's gap control or sorting the rush or moving your feet behind your own net, your decision making in front of your own net, and your transition game, which gets the puck going the other way. You spend time in your own end, you're going to lose hockey games, period. Okay? So you don't want to, I mean, pretty simple, right? You don't want to play in your own end, right? Mm-hmm. You want the puck going the other way, which means creating turnovers so you're not playing in your own end, making sure that they're not playing near your net, and then getting your defense involved in the offense. The Hawks' offense has always started with their defense. We have always spent so much time talking about Taves and Kane and Hossa and all of the great
forwards. But those cross-ice passes to get you going in transition.
Everything begins with that. So, you know, there's no Nick Leddy here to quarterback all of this. Mm-hmm. You need to develop every one of these guys. You need to get Forsling back here. You need Ruda and Kempney, and you need to find out what Murphy is. And Gustafson, who, if you recall, was the GOAT in Game 7 against two years ago against St. Louis and was never here last year, now looks like he belongs in the NHL. Is there work to do? Of course there is. But he is supremely confident now moving the puck and becoming part of the offense. There's a guy. So now that's a guy who becomes part of what you do next. You just need to play all these guys.
It's a grim, grim big picture. And that's why a lot of us just kind of want it to go away, sadly. Soon enough it will. Maybe they'll shut down Corey Crawford as an admission of where they are and where things stand. I think they're 10 games back of that second wild card points back of that second wild card with three different teams in front of them. Yeah. With a fourth team back.
They have a better chance of winning the draft lottery right now than they do of making the playoffs. That's the truth. I'm not making that up.
God. All right, so again, bigger picture.
Yeah. Go ahead and win that draft lottery.
Pittsburgh goes 7 years without a cup, and you think that thing's done, right? There's no chance for Crosby and Malkin. You think there's no chance.
They became themselves again.
Well, not only that, but Matt, they decided that if they're going to bring guys up like Gensel or Sheary or Rust, that they're going to put, you know, you bring a guy up who was a great goal scorer in the American League. And you bring them up and you don't put them on the fourth line. You say, you're a goal scorer. Go score goals. I'll play you with Crosby or Malkin. Go score goals. That's what they did with Gensel. They bring up role players and they say, you killed penalties in the American League. You're going to kill penalties here. So I don't have to use my best players on the PK all the time, which you know, is a lot of minutes and a lot of pain. We're going to bring up young defensemen or average defensemen, and we're going to roll six defensemen all the time against everybody. We're not going to play matchups because in the postseason, if you rely on only four like Nashville did last year, come game three of the Stanley Cup final, there's nothing left of those guys. Not everybody's Duncan Keith and can play 30 minutes a game for 2 months. Most guys can't do that. He's a freak. So you roll six defensemen and you say, we're going to develop these guys and we're going to play, and they're just going to play. We're not going to match up. They're just going to play. I'm not criticizing specifically any incident or any particular philosophy of anyone here in Chicago. Because when you have the kind of guys that they had, and you had the kind of and you had a Keith and a Seabrook and a Jalmerson.
But this should signal you to go ahead and do the kind of things you're talking about.
As quickly as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a way, Stan kind of forced the coaching staff to start to play some of these guys when he moved some veterans out. And, I mean, what do we know about Connor Murphy today that we didn't at the start of the season?
Well, see, and this is where, and maybe so most important, if it's time to do that, and let's say Stan realizes it's time to do that, instead of forcing the hand through roster moves and through a couple of little coaching changes, maybe that's why you make the big coaching change, because you need somebody to implement the kind of philosophical change that you're talking about, as opposed to scrambling and scratching and clawing to try and get the most out of your guys every night.
I know I've been really critical of Joel over the years, especially for the Letty thing, because, you know, that one hurts so much. Those guys are so hard to find. But I don't know that's necessarily the right way to go, that blame on that particular guy.
I'm not even talking about the blame. I'm just saying, like, if you're moving forward, he better be on board with everything you're talking
about.
Joel
has said specifically, I mean, Joel has a pretty decent explanation at times for some of his decisions on some of the kids. And I think essentially what it is if you give me veterans and I can rely on these veterans, I'm going to play these veterans. If I don't, then obviously I'm going to play the kids. Maybe that's the answer. He is a Hall of Fame coach.
But Hall of Famers get moved on from when the cycle changes.
I'm not saying that that necessarily what you're suggesting is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't know that it's right. I think when it's the very worst, you have to be careful and try to keep a bigger picture and some perspective on really what's gone on here the last 10 years.
This segment on The Score is brought to you by Fogo de Chão, the authentic Brazilian steakhouse where premium fire-roasted meats like filet and lamb chops are carved right at your table. Indulge today at Fogo in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville. I will clarify some horrific Fat Tuesday information that was given by a man who doesn't understand Lent, just doesn't know how it works, because tonight is the end of Mardi Gras. It's the end. It's Fat Tuesday. Tomorrow, Ash Wednesday, is the beginnings of Lent, right? And you start trimming the fat, essentially, is how it works.
It's the day you walk around and you say, hey, buddy, you got some schmutz on your forehead.
Right, that's tomorrow.
Sorry, forgive me.
Yeah, tonight you drink and you revel and you enjoy the New Orleans-style music.
Sharon Panazzo walked in the press box at Ho-Ho Cam one day, or one Ash Wednesday, and I was like, I took my thumb and I was like, Sharon, let me get this off your forehead here. She's like, moron. It's Ash Wednesday.
Yeah. So, you know, I apologize for the incorrect information. I was not taught in Hebrew school. It speaks in Rosner right here on 670 The Score. Three technique at the top of the hour.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. Spiegs and Rosner here with you on the Spiegel and Parkins Show, broadcasting to you live from the glorious Chicago Auto Show. As always, the carpet looks amazing. There's just so much of it. I can barely see the seams, Barry, and I don't see a speck of dirt. I don't know what kind of high-level vacuum process they have, or whether, do you suppose it's brand new every year?
I was going to ask you that, but I think I ask you that every year, is what happens to the carpet.
At the end of the auto show?
Yeah, because
I feel like I sing the carpet praises enough that I deserve some. They should give me like a swath of it, you know, kind of like at Wrigley when they redo the turf and they give out pieces of grass, you know, give out a chunk of sod to you.
It's funny how
that's... Give me some carpet.
It's funny how that's changed, hasn't it? They sell the sod, they sell the ivy, they sell the chairs. Back in the day, when I used to run past Wrigley Field or ride my bike past it down to the lake, you could just find that stuff out on Sheffield.
Yeah.
Stuff would just be out there. Turf, dirt, ivy,
seats.
Chairs. Just you could grab it. It was just laying out on Sheffield. Like they were just tossing it all in dumpsters. Now they sell a chair for $1,000.
Yeah, man, you got to afford your $126 million pitcher somehow, right? You got to find a way to do it.
We could get you some of this carpet.
Yeah, let's get me some of that.
Don't
by
you
the
have
end
hardwood
of the day.
Floors?
I have a mix. I have a mix, Barry. Thanks for asking. You know, it's been a while since you've been over. I invite you, but just say no.
Yeah, and then, don't hold your breath.
Really, you're not interested in pursuing.
Not very much.
Friendship. What is over there? I see. I see, like, some. Is there an obstacle course of sorts? Are we going to have some of these cars driving around and doing some jumps and leaps, or is that just wishful thinking on my part?
You say it as though you're looking forward to it. Have you forgotten how loud it can get?
I don't care. I enjoy it. Remember, like, I'm the new monster truck devotee, having discovered it for the first time 2 years ago. With a small child, my own. I recommend if you're going to go with a child, to go with your own. And I brought mine, and just the sheer joy of the monster trucks doing their thing, man, I'm in. That's not, it's coming back next month to Rosemont.
Did I know this? Did I know that
you were
a monster truck guy?
You know, the only different grave diggers we got around my house? We got the little tiny one, we got a slightly bigger one, and now the gigantic remote control grave digger, where it's like, hey, kid, you mind if I play with that for a while? Or like after he goes away sometimes, I'll just hang around and play with that, take it through the hallways.
The moment you admit that the toys you're buying are really more for you than for your child.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Just absolutely bash it against the walls. You do whatever you need. I never had enough remote control cars and trucks as a kid, so now, of course, I'm playing with it completely. The Gravedigger, I mean, by that. And then I wanted to find him some music, because he's like, Daddy, let's listen to Gravedigger. I wanted to listen to a song called Gravedigger, and I'm like, I don't know. And so I look it up, and I found a song called Gravedigger from an album called Gravedigger by a band called Gravedigger.
It's remarkably consistent.
Oh, it is just absolutely... I mean, crap in like the purest.
Hey, come on!
In the purest like death metal sense.
As a musician,
yeah,
you really.
I think it's. I mean, I enjoy it. I enjoy it with him, but yeah, it's really. It's not good.
It's not Caillou. It could be worse.
Oh, man.
You know, you could. I watched an entire episode of Caillou in French once.
Why?
Because it was on.
And it's less annoying than English.
And the girls wanted to, I mean, because it was on and it was mistakenly broadcast in French, and they liked Caillou, so we sat there and we watched.
No, you know my feelings on Caillou. They're not appropriate for air. I said them once and I regretted it immediately.
One night, and I think, I'm not sure who I was, I bet I was hosting with Joe Ostrowski. Joe, was it you the night that the guys, we were out here at the auto show, and the producers back in the studio found every version of Caillou in every imaginable language.
It was a nightmare. As soon as you brought up Caillou, I was thinking, oh, no, Rick, he's going to make Rick find that song.
Don't do it.
Find the French version,
no.
Rick. I think everybody should hear it.
No.
I really do.
Find Gravedigger by the band Gravedigger from the album Gravedigger. We can play that instead. I'd rather hear that than Caillou. Let's take a poll. What would you rather hear? Oh, just asked and answered. Gravedigger's your winner. I'm told, yes, new carpet every year. Every single year, brand new carpet. So let's choose a batch for me to take, and we'll get out of here, you with a car and me with some carpet. I think that's a win.
Well, that sounds like a great deal.
We spent some time yesterday talking about the seemingly complete Cubs, the mostly complete Cubs, now that Yu Darvish is there. How about the competition? We bounce around the National League Central in three technique next. It's 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.